other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Kentucky Dan's Fashion Juice, Drink Like a Star. I am Aaron Hiller, personal pals, Brick.
Hello.
We have Dave.
Hello.
And we have Old Irish Nico.
Hello.
Folks, it's time to talk about reading. Let's talk about the books, which is our new slogan. It's a What Are Reading episode. It's been a while since we've caught up on our nightstands and reading lists and so forth. I want to hear what my personal pals are reading these days. We'll start with Dave this time. Dave, what have you been reading lately?
I read a novel called Revolver by a writer named Evan Schwartz. It's about a high school kid in the late 70s who has, like, visions of John Lennon being killed. So he makes it his goal to ensure that that doesn't happen. Spoiler alert, it does. He goes to the Dakota, he hangs out there, and he steps in front of the bullets and dies. It wasn't terrible. So it's first-person point of view from two kids, like two high school kids, and it's so the voice is kind of juvenile in a way that didn't really work for me. Although the concept I like. But it gave me a good question, like a non-bro-to-bro question for you guys. Like,
oh, is it a lad-to-lad question?
It's not even a lad-to-lad. It's just about the books.
Okay. Aaron, we're talking about the books.
Yeah, this is, we're a books podcast.
Sometimes.
So one of my favorite books, which I tried to make you guys read, is Beetlebone by Kevin Berry, also about John Lennon. And I doubt I would have read this novel if it weren't about John Lennon as well. So, but then I thought about how James Patterson is coming out, or has already come out with a John Lennon book, which is like, yeah. I think technically it's nonfiction, but it's, but it's like fictionalized. And it has three names on the front cover. Uh-huh. Rather than his usual two.
Written in the house next door to the house where John Lennon one time went on vacation?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
There was something absurd like that was written in the copy for it. Was that it's like he wrote it in his vacation house, which is next door to where John Lennon and Yoko Ono like ate an apple one time or something.
Right.
Right.
And so I have like sort of an intense disinterest in reading that book.
But you have to.
But still, like it made me wonder if you guys are more inclined or less inclined to read fiction about a famous person who you're interested in or admire, or like a topic that your comic books, for example, or like, do you seek out fiction that is about people or things that you're interested in?
Less interested.
Or do you stay away from it?
I wouldn't say seek it out, but I did. I mean, I read West of Sunset because it was about Fitzgerald and I was interested in that.
Yeah.
I like him as a writer and I like that sort of story of the authors who went to Hollywood to become screenwriters and sort of largely ended up in these sort of like, you know, writing sort of screenplays that were sort of like nameless movies that are, no one really cares about the movies they wrote, really. They're not like necessarily the famous classics that we remember. But that was more just, it seemed intriguing and the story seemed interesting, but I wasn't like looking to read all of Fitzgerald-inspired novels that are out there. Yeah. So I'd say not, I don't seek it out, but it's not necessarily a detractor for me. Brick, you said no.
I usually think it's annoying.
Why?
Because oftentimes it feels like forced or pandering or like an unnecessary gimmick and gets in the way of what would maybe be a better book. Like, what was it? Ready Player One? Like, like that book wasn't horrible. It wasn't very good. And what made it worse was trying to shoehorn all that stuff in. There was a better book in there if it wasn't just jam-packed with annoying Atari references. Nico, I see your face. It wasn't a great book, but it was not... It was not the worst book I ever read, but it was made worse by all that stuff that got in the way, right?
Hmm. Well, having read his second book, which didn't have any of those references and was significantly worse, I don't know if he's a good idea, a good example.
Well, still, I mean, but I'm still not interested, right? Because I don't need that. Like, I don't want things full of references. Yeah. We've talked on different either episodes or Bro to Bros and how like the second people start or authors start naming songs in a story or in a book, I'm out. Like, I don't care. Yeah. It feels like a crutch. You know, if you've got a good enough story, then that stuff can exist in there and be fine. But if if that's what you're hanging it on to get me to read the book, like, nope.
I think some of it, too, might also depend on like we've talked recently, especially about McEwen, like established writers who are just like doing things as a lark, which is what the Patterson book strikes me as. It's like, you know, I lived in this place once, so I'm going to write. Or I'm going to hire two people this time to write this book for me and put my name on it. Whereas like this one, Revolver, seems more like a guy who was a John Lennon fan and wanted to envision a world where John Lennon doesn't die. So there's some heart to this book that I'm sure James Patterson's won't have. And Beetlebone, and the reason I think that one worked even better for me was that it being John Lennon was not the point of the book. Whereas with this, it is.
Yeah.
That's an important difference, I think. I would be more interested probably in a text that was about, that was like inspired by that person and the fan of that person than like Cavalier and Clay. It's not about Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, but it kind of was about Jack Kirby and Stan Lee.
That's a great
book.
Okay, correction. The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay is actually more about Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel, not about Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. I know that. You know that. Everyone knows that. I'm an idiot. Goodbye. And that's a good example of that. Or like, it's not a book, but the movie Velvet Goldmine by Todd Haynes, which is kind of like about Bowie and Lou Reed and Iggy Pop, but it's not really about them. It's like pastiches. That stuff does interest me. I like pastiche more than I like historical recreation like that.
Yeah. When like something like Lennon, where it's like about his assassination and you bring in that kind of outside context for whatever reason, that I just can't get behind that. It's just personal preference. But yeah, I agree. Like if it's enough of a pastiche that I can't see the real people and the point isn't the real people, then I can be into it.
Yeah. So Dave, was this like an alternate history novel? Like you say he jumps from the bullet. Does he save John Lennon in the end? Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert for this novel, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's even another twist on it too, where it's like,
yeah, he does. And he's narrating from some sort of like hazy afterlife. I mean, it's all, it doesn't work, but
I'm not into that. I want to be as close to reality as possible.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound good.
Yeah. Nice. Good. Brick, what about you?
I actually read books this time.
Good work. We're talking about books.
Uh-huh. So I have three. One is going to be quick because I want to do an episode on it.
Oh, shit.
That Boy Lives. Which is just kind of like a coffee table book, but it's a collection of Weekly World News articles.
That's awesome.
Which I used to read all the time, and I loved that shit at the grocery store.
That's great.
There's some great ones in here. So it's a nice little nostalgic trip going through them, but it's already on our list of, like, I'd like to do a Weekly World News episode.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I won't go too into it, but found it used, and it was pretty cheap, and it was exactly what I needed to suck up a few hours on an evening when I needed to have dumb stuff in my brain.
That'd be a good bathroom book, too.
It was. So I wrote in my notes, a good bathroom or coffee table book.
We'll do the poop scale.
There's some funny-ass shit in here. I forgot. It kind of, like, The Onion and the internet sort of murdered Weekly World News, but and there's some stuff that's not maybe okay anymore. It was the 90s.
Different time. Yeah,
there's like a whole section of like gay bashing Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, but
that stuff is still happening.
Yeah,
just with Putin.
So but for the most part it's pretty funny. Then I got another one I'm gonna talk about quickly because it's just fine. This is called You're Ruining the Dystopia for Everyone. It is a collection of link dystopian sci-fi stories written by Frank Conniff, who was TV's Frank on Mystery Science Theater.
That's cool.
It's all right. So the whole pretense of the link stories is it's a publishing house in the middle of a dystopia. So people are sending in their narratives. And then so between the stories, there's kind of the editors like trying to figure out like, what the fuck is that? And it's pretty lighthearted. Like it's like a B movie aesthetic kind of runs through the whole thing. There's nothing like the writing and none of the humor is amazing, but it's also not like cringy and bad. It's a pretty, you know, the book's 130 pages. And it was again, a nice like evening. Of just none of the stories are all 12-15 pages long, so it was a nice kind of like relaxing read, so I liked it. It was good.
That's cool. I want to read that. That sounds fun.
Yeah, none of the stories, there's not a single story in here that's like, wow, you got to read this story, but as a like a whole collection, it was pleasurable.
That's cool.
And then speaking of our boy Ian McEwan,
oh god, it's late this year, usually it's in January.
No, so I felt bad about how mean we've been. So what I did was I dug up the first book of his I ever read, which is The Cement Garden. And I have not read this book, I don't think, since college. Maybe I read it since then, but if I did, it was 10 plus years ago. Not my favorite of his books, but up there. And still very good. I forgot how fucked up this book was. The general... Has anyone read this?
No, but you told us about it.
Yeah, so the general conceit is that there's these four siblings and their parents die and they hide the body. And then they kind of like live together incestuously.
Right.
So I remembered it being kind of like disturbing a little bit, but it's a lot more than like, it's right up there with End of Alice and Marabou Stork Nightmares is like books that are really like, there's some scenes in here that are pretty hard to stomach.
Right.
But it's really well written. You know, there's a lot of like pretty interesting stuff going on with characters and thematics. Very visceral descriptions of cum and rotting body smells that Aaron would appreciate. So
yikes.
So it was nice. I think what I'll do, I'm going to take a little McEwan break, but I'd like, my favorite book of his was called Solar, so I'll probably try and read that again at some point. And then leave him alone. I think is the plan. Need a couple. Yeah, that book. Nice. That book is pretty good. I'm not sure it's his best book, but it was my favorite one. There's a very funny scene in that book that really stuck out to me. So Saturday is pretty good, and so is On Chesil Beach. And those and then obviously 1984. But we're gonna do a separate episode.
Yeah, totally. Excellent, Nico.
Wait, Dave, are you reading Solar, or do you just happen to have it there?
It's just on hand.
Have you read it before?
Never read any McEwen.
So it was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, because of you, I know the ones to try and the ones to stay away from.
Yeah. Yeah. The Reader's Guide to Ian McEwen by Brick.
Yeah.
Nico.
So I have a few that I'm going to try and blow through because most of them are terrible. I read a book. Well, I made it approximately 15
strong
minutes
disagree.
Into an audio book called The Force by Don Winslow. That's like a story about like a renegade cop. I made it to the line where this cop says the NYPD will give you a medal for being stupid and take your badge for being smart, in reference to like basically shooting black kids. I was like, that's enough for me. That's too rich for my blood. And so then also, so Kathleen and I decided to write a YA fantasy book together.
So, that's awesome.
Swanlight Whispers.
So, yeah, basically. So I read a few YA fantasy books, and I have some grievances. So one was called Sorcery of Thorns. I thought it was like kind of a cool idea. It's about this student who works at this magical library where the books like can escape and can fight back, basically. And part of the job is to, you know, tame the books and like have relationships with the books. But she's like 18, and she's so naive that it's difficult to even like take her seriously. Like, so there's a wizard that she meets, and she's like, how do wizards get their power? Remember, she's 18, and the wizard says, well, I drink a cup of orphan's blood every night. And she goes, and she thinks to herself, oh my god, I'm an orphan. And it's like, yeah, that's the joke. He knows that you're an orphan. He was joking. He knew you were joking. He knew he was joking. The narrator knew he was joking. The audience knew he, the reader knows he's joking. You're the only one that doesn't know he's joking. And she continues to think that he drinks orphan's blood for like half the book.
Right.
And then finally he just says like, that was a joke. And she was like, oh, thank God. I thought you were going to drink my blood. And it's like, no, I can't. You're just too, you're like a 9-year old that just takes everything literally. So kick that one to the curb. Next, this book canon. Called Throne of Glass, which had great reviews. I think my recommendations on Audible have gotten completely out of whack because I didn't do enough research on it. It's about the most deadly and famous assassin in the world, who is also an incredibly beautiful woman, and also. So she's trained all over the world. She's become the most famous assassin. Everybody knows her name. And then also she's screwed up her latest job. She goes to prison for a year. She gets out of prison in order to take part in this tournament. And she has just turned 18. And it's like there has to be a disadvantage. Like some part of her, like, was she at 9 when she was assassinating people? Like, just doesn't make any sense. And I hate the all-powerful protagonist who doesn't have any weaknesses, and it's like, yeah, she can do everything. It's like, for one thing, she's a girl, and she's like fighting, you know, this 35-year-old 300-pound hitman who's, you know, just punching the shit out of her. It's like, yeah, she's dead. She's not like, you know, thinking of a clever ruse. Like, she's just fucked, or else this book like ceases to make sense. And then after I read it, I found out that the author had started writing it when she was 16, which made a lot of sense.
Sure. Yeah,
but some people really like it because the entire series has like 5 out of 5, not even 4.9.
16-year-old girls, which is the target audience.
Yeah,
right.
And then I read the Shadow and Bone books, which is going to be a series on Netflix next month.
I started one of those and I never got very far.
They were okay. The first one was pretty good because it's about this fantasy world where the mages have these kind of 3 different specialties. Like they can either affect people's bodies or materials in the world or the ethereal world. So like there's an entire group of them that just like make metal for nice swords, and it's a bit of a different magic, is far from all powerful the way it sometimes is. So then the main character is kind of has to figure out this world, and she's a bit more powerful than the rest of them. But in the first book, there's like a bad guy who you're not sure if he's the bad guy or not. And she and the main character and her and the main character's boyfriend had this love triangle. And it's like, okay, that's pretty good. And then it turns out, nope, he's just a monster and he's terrible. And after you take away that kind of that question of whether or not he's a good guy, whether his ideas are actually good, then it makes it a lot less interesting.
Right.
And I'm also hoping that this TV show will take away a lot of the kind of anguished inner monologue where she's just like, I couldn't believe that, you know, oh, does he really like me or does he not? It's
like, yeah. The worst part of all YA literature is that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I don't need that for 30 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it should be worth checking out, the TV show, anyway.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I love the idea. I can't believe saying this as far to do this, like, activate Nico and, like, drop him into the YA world, just, like, see what happens. Like, this is, like, this would be its own spinoff podcast, too. It's, like, Nico's adventures in the library. Just, like, taking whole shelves of YA novels and critiquing them.
It's rough. It's rough going. Only
listens to YA fantasy audiobooks now.
Just ruin Nico. I got a few things. I finished that short story collection by Walter Mosley, The Awkward Black Man. It was only okay. Some stories were really good. In the middle, especially, a couple stories stood out as being really effective and affecting, I should say. But a lot of them, too many stories were focused on men in their late 50s and early 60s who were in relationships with women who were in their 20s and 30s who were extremely hot. And the men are always like infirm or like fat and old, but like the women are drawn to them. And it's like, I wonder how old Walter Mosley is. Like, it's just like, it seems very closely tied to a sort of wish fulfillment thing.
I feel like that's the middle-aged man version of the power fantasy where teenage girl's power fantasy is to be the beautiful assassin who can defeat anybody in combat.
Yeah. And like,
it's like the same two sides of the same coin.
The adult man version is much more pernicious and fucked up than the other one.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of the similar thing of like, right, I get where this is coming from. Yeah. So those stories didn't quite hit for me, but some of them were really good. I can see he's a massively prolific writer. I can see sort of why people like his detective work probably. I would probably enjoy reading that more than these stories. One of the stories at the end was one of the worst stories I've ever read in my entire life. But some were quite good. I kind of want to do an episode about it, maybe. So we might sort of break this down later. We'll see if it's even worth it.
Should we all read it?
That's what I think. I might make you read it at some point. So
nice.
Stand by for that potentially. Also, had a chance. I had like one weekend recently where I didn't have any grading to do, and I was like, oh, I could read a 33 and a third. And so I read one of the recent acquisitions I got, which was about the Golden Hits of the Shangri-Las by Ada Wolin. Love the Shangri-Las, leader of the pack, and those songs are fantastic. This one was pretty good. It started off really good. It was a really interesting discussion of the way that girl groups are discussed in the canon of music and sort of like, you know, rockism versus popism and that kind of stuff. Had the problems of 33 to thirds where they kind of become repetitive, or the author makes a point three times without acknowledging they've made that point before, and it feels like different drafts kind of cobbled together in some ways. And also, I did find by the end it was weird that the author was being very defensive about the way that we talk about girl groups, but didn't just start talking about them in a more critical way. It was like almost like a weird posture of like, people, rock critics tend to dismiss girl groups and here's why, which is interesting and we're talking about, but it also didn't just start talking about them as like, we could have treated these Shangri-Las as worth discussing anyway and gone for it from there. I don't know. It was a bit weird in that regard, but still overall pretty good. And listening to Shangri-Las is always good. So that was worthwhile. And then, so I'm reading still the Rorschach comic by Tom King and Jorge Fornes. Still so good. Really enjoying it and totally surprised they have been pulling that off. It's not a bad sequel to Watchmen. It's not trying to be, really. It's just taking the world and kind of twisting it, and I'm still really enjoying it. And then my big read lately, I've read like, I think 6 volumes now of this new Hulk comic called The Immortal Hulk. I've been hearing good things about it. I think listeners had recommended this to me, and I was like, I should check this out because it was on Hoopla. I've never been a Hulk fan, really. I like the Hulk just fine, but I've never really read Hulk comics consistently at all. But I know Brick is a Hulk fan. I was like, maybe I'll check this out and see if I can recommend it to my friend Brick here. It's so fucking good. It's incredible. But I cannot recommend it to Brick because it's so tied to continuity and it's so tied to like knowing shit about the Hulk.
And
like,
the Hulk shit gets real confusing.
Dude, you're not kidding.
There's like four different versions of the Hulk and some can bend planets. I don't know. I tried figuring that out one time and I gave up in a hurry. I didn't get through the Wikipedia article.
I'm doing as much Wikipedia reading as I am reading the comics. I'm just trying to piece things together. So like my prior knowledge is totally inadequate to this. And it's not frustrating because I the story is still so good. The basic concept here is that the Hulk was killed during a Marvel Comics event, and was brought back to life because essentially the Hulk is from hell. He's like powered by the forces of hell, essentially. And like there's a demonic Hulk entity that is taking over, and now he can never die. And so during the day, Bruce Banner is alive. And then if he gets hurt at night, he becomes... So if you kill Bruce Banner during the day, he will be dead until night. And then at night, he comes back to life as the Hulk. And he's intelligent.
What happens the next morning? Is he dead again?
No, he comes back to life. He's just like, it's like he's sun, literally immortal.
The sun comes up and he's just a fucking corpse.
Right. Yeah. Dissolves back into a corpse. Yeah. But like, there's a bunch of body horror. Like, the art by Joe Bennett is pretty good at depicting, like, at one point, Betty Banner rips the Hulk's heart out and eats it. And it's like, fucking vile, but then he comes back to life the next issue. It's really nasty. Like, there's tons of like gross gore and shit, but also really, really compelling. And the larger narrative is about, so the Hulk is trying to destroy the world because he's like, humanity is just like beyond saving. Like, they fucked the planet up so much. There's one issue about basically like everything's awful. Like, we've ruined everything. Climate change, like political strife, like war, inhumanity. He's like, humans don't deserve to live. And so the Hulk is like the judgment of the earth. It's fucking fascinating. I really like it. But like I said, I can't tell Brooke to read it because this is too, it's too hard to piece it all together.
I do need a new comic, but not this one.
I mean, maybe try it. Maybe see what happens. Get for free on Hoopla and give it a shot and let me know what happens, how far you get. But yeah, definitely worth reading if you're all looking for a horror comic. It's fucked up for sure. Those are our reads. Listeners, tell us what your reads are on Twitter at YakBabies, and our Gmail. Oh God, our email address is YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, it has been a while. I had figured it out for a while, but now my brain has turned to mush. Also, our podcasts, our Patreon. Oh boy, Patreon.com/YakBabies. Our secret podcast for $1 a month. Get access to all those bonuses. There's bro to bro discussions and draft games and all kinds of stuff. And a new podcast called Snack Babies, which is all about snacks. So check that out there too. And also our merch. We'll have a tiny URL sometime soon on our Twitter. You can buy shirts and mugs and stuff with funny graphics done by Brick that are very, very good. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners, and especially their patrons, both past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, Kathleen, Bailey, Andrew, and William Howard Taft.